Hello, and welcome back to Hyperbaric Living Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Masha, and today I have with me a very exciting guest. You'll learn and you'll know why he is exciting and what's so exciting about it. It's Joe DeTore. He is a hyperbaric researcher. He is on the board of directors of International iBoom Association. He is everything you really need to know about hyperbaric medicine and hyperbarics. And what's most exciting is that you are now underwater, right?
Yep. I am now talking to you from underwater at 1.61 atmospheres right now. Yeah, it changes every day a little bit, but 1.61 atmospheres. And I'm actually sitting here speaking with you while underwater.
Wow. Wow. And
our
internet.
Backyard.
Yeah. That's a nice view. And today's day 30, you said 34?
37.
Yep. Does it mean that you're not going to come up for the whole 100 days that you're going to be underwater?
That's true. I will not breach the surface. I will not come out of the surface. I will always be under pressure for 100 days.
Could you tell us a bit more about this whole project, 100 days underwater, under pressure?
Yeah, so the project came from initially when I retired from the U.S. Navy. I was a Navy Special Operations Officer for 28 years, did the PhD in biomedical engineering, and now I'm doing research in hyperbaric medicine. Hyper, more than, baric, pressure. Here we are at increased pressure. So that's how this whole thing started, was to live in the ocean, because, you know, where are all the good sushi joints by your house when you moved to Madrid, you know, and when you move there, you got to go look for where's the sushi joints, where don't you go to get gas, where's a bad neighborhood, right? So you have to learn that in your environment, and you don't know it until you live there. You can visit there all you want, but when you live there, that's when you get to know the place. So here I am living right here, and now I'm understanding more about the marine environment and the pressurized environment.
So that means you will be under pressure as if you were sitting inside a hyperbaric chamber under 1.6 atmospheric pressure for 100 days.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Why 100 days?
Because I can't afford to do 200 days. So everything is a multi-pronged approach, right? Our closest point of approach on a Holmann transfer to get from here to Mars is 200 days. So if we are stuck in an isolated, confined, extreme environment for 200 days, we better start figuring out what happens mentally, physically, from a physiologic perspective. You know, you have to check all that stuff before you just get in a tin can and go drive across space and time to a planet, and then you arrive. I mean, we know there are certain problems that happen when the astronauts go, and we're trying to solve those problems as we go, because we are in an isolated, confined, extreme environment down here. So they're similar, they're analogous. So we like to train our astronauts in the water, and that's what we're trying to do here.
So what have you noticed so far? It's been 37 days. Anything that first comes to mind when you think about it?
Yeah, normal Navy saturation dives are between 34 and 36 days. So I've just passed that threshold. We know a couple of different things. I'm slightly more myopic because we knew that was going to happen. Your focal point is less than 20 feet. Therefore, your vision cannot remain 20/20. It becomes more myopic. So I've increased urinary output increases by about 18 to 20%. And anybody that does happen to be able to come down here has that same effect. So they've noticed about an 18% increase, but it's only the males. So I haven't done many experiments on females. So there's that. But those are the two things that we've noticed so far. Remember, we're doing blood tests. So we're doing stem cell observations, you know, stem cell flow cytometry, sending it up on the surface, right? We're doing brain-derived neurotrophic factor, insulin growth factor, vascular endothelial growth factor. All that stuff is blood test. You know, we're talking, that's going to be 6 months after we're done. We'll know a lot more, but you know, it's unfortunate, but that's the way it is. So,
So I have to get you back on a podcast 6 months later so you can share all these findings. I have a lot of questions, of course, because you're in a pressurized environment and this is a hyperbaric show. You mentioned myopia. It's going to be irreversible, right? When the experiment is over, or we don't know.
Yeah, but this myopia is not from hyperbaric myopia, right? It's not from oxygen-induced myopia. It's from focal point distance myopia. And we know this from submarines. So U.S. Navy submarines will go underwater for a period of up to 90 days. And when they do, their staff will come out and they have never seen for 90 days something longer than 20 feet away. So their focal point is reduced to 14 or 15 feet.
Have you noticed any changes in your sleep, for example? Are you sleeping more? Are you sleeping less?
I'm sleeping less, but my sleep is overall deep sleep is increased by about 25 or 30%, right? Mm-hmm. It's that warm hug, right? It's that increased pressure. So it's that increased metabolism during the day. So, you know, you have to be increased metabolism because you have an increased oxygen down here due to the laws of physics and partial pressure, right? So I'm breathing about 36%, 35% oxygen on a regular basis. So therefore my metabolism must be increased. So, you know, now what that compensatory reaction is over a long period of time, no clue. We don't have any idea. Will I come up with less red blood cells? I don't know.
Yeah. What about heart rate and heart rate variability? Are you measuring those? Of course you are. You're measuring every single thing.
Yeah, exactly. EEGs, EKGs, pulmonary function tests on a regular basis. So yeah. As a matter of fact, interestingly enough, I just received a U.S. patent from the U.S. Patent Office three Thursdays ago. While I was down here, I got the email saying, yep, you're in. And what that is, it's a heart rate variability tracker. And that heart rate variability tracker senses autonomic nervous system stress. So I'm using that on a regular basis. So it has not changed my heart rate variability. But that heart rate variability tracker can sense hyperoxic stress, hypercapnic stress, hypoxic stress, and decompressive stress. So this is like the perfect thing for an astronaut to wear.
It is really cool. And it's something that we were missing. There's sort of some information in wearable devices like Oura Ring, but it doesn't give you the full picture and it's really difficult to see. Like I wasn't able to track 100% how it changes. For example, when I'm inside a hyperbaric chamber, I can see the trend, but I want to see in detail, second by second, I want to see what's happening.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what we should be looking at. That's exactly what we should be looking at. So yeah, tracking heart rate variability, tracking blood pressure, SpO2, that kind of sort of stuff. And obviously, if you don't have SpO2 of 99 while you're down here, you have some kind of a problem.
I was wondering about body temperature, core body temperature. Has it dropped?
Has not dropped as we've seen so far. 98.5, 98.6 is me all the time. So has not dropped any more than a point here or there, a point up or down.
I want to go back to hyperbaric science because you're a scientist. What's interesting for me is the time that we spend inside a hyperbaric chamber, because really there's no set rules on how you should do it. Some people have their preconceptions, others have experience that they speak from. What is your take? How long should hyperbaric sessions be? Like, what is that gold standard there?
Wow, that is a very broad question. And I want to back up to a story that I was relayed by a hyperbaric researcher named Paul back in the day. And I mean, we're talking back in the day, you know, the 80s, when he was doing hyperbaric research. And, you know, he was a colonel in the Air Force and doing research in Texas. So when the person came in through the gate to be treated, they would have to leave their car outside, get on the bus. The bus would do a round trip loop, go to the hyperbaric center, which was way down here, and then get off, get undressed and get everything going. So he designed this whole experiment to check for this one thing that this general was getting cured from. So the general was to get out of his car, get dropped off by the bus, be there for an hour and a half underwater, under pressure, if you will, to be treated, and then get back on the bus when it made the next loop, but it only made the next loop every hour and a half. So he'd miss the bus for an hour and a half because it took him 10 minutes to get down and 6 minutes to get up. So he missed it. So now he's got to wait another hour before the bus comes back. And he was going to do it for 7 days a week, constantly on for an hour and a half a day. And the general said, Colonel, that's not the way this is going to work. I'm going to do this 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, and I'm only going to do it for an hour at a time so that I can have 10 minutes to get down, 6 minutes to get up, 76 total minutes. I'll change really quick, and then I'll make the bus. So that's the way the study was done. And that's the study that was published that we have evidence for, and that's what we treat on. So it's like that study was predicated upon a bus schedule in Texas. So don't think that we know the answer to that question, but what we have to do is speak from an informed scientific perspective, right? Because you can't say that treating somebody on air at 1.27 on air is the same and will give you the same results as treating somebody at 2.0 for an hour and a half or 2.8 for, you know, an hour or whatever, right? So the answer is we don't know, and we're trying to figure this stuff out. Here's the problem. Hyperbaric research is unfunded and non-pharmacy stuff. So big pharma is not paying for us to do 420,000 people in a phase 2D clinical trial so that we can prove the efficacy of hyperbarics, right? No, we're not doing that. We don't have the money to do that. Nobody does. So, but it's not something you can get hooked on, and it's not a drug that's going to cause you bad things.
Sometimes people say, well, if you're not doing it with oxygen, you just do longer sessions, but it doesn't work this way. It doesn't have that inverse relationship. Or if you're not doing higher pressure, do lower pressure, but stay a longer time inside the chamber. Again, it doesn't work that way. So I wanted to ask, what was your perspective? How do we find, at least, or to give people some idea at how long they should be staying? You're there for 100 days inside a hyperbaric chamber.
But all that stuff that you just talked about is known. So we know all that stuff because we've done research. And what I do is I go, what is the disease that you have, right? So whatever the disease is, I look for the mechanism of action on this side of the chart. I find the mechanism of action for hyperbaric medicine, and I go hyperbaric, hyperoxic medicine or hyperbaric medicine. And I will use that in the application to get the derived mechanism of action. So we know all that stuff. So it depends on what your disease is, right? So, you know, like if you go, I have Crohn's or ulcerative colitis. It's a disease of inflammation. It's an inflammatory response. We know that interleukin 6 is the driver of that, right? Interleukin 6 is a cytokine, right? It's an inflammatory cytokine. So you go, well, I really got to get my interleukin 6 back in the range where it needs to be. How do I do that? First, I eat an anti-inflammatory diet. Second, I cut out all this other stuff. Third, right? Because it's not just physiologically that we need to treat. We need to treat physically, physiologically, and psychologically simultaneously. Otherwise, the human body's not going to fail. You're a naturopathic doctor. You know all that. But then we apply the mechanism of action for the hyperbarics, and we select. But this is what you do when you take a hyperbaric medicine course and you get a functional medicine certificate in hyperbarics. You know all that stuff. By the end, you go, oh, here's the exact schedule and table that I should be using for this so that I can increase brain-derived neurotrophic factor, increase hypoxic-inducing factor, 1-alpha, whatever. So yeah, all that stuff's actually known. We just have to find and talk to the right people. And yeah, we can definitely get that, but it depends on the disease for the person. So we're trying to simplify hyperbaric medicine at the International Board of Undersea Medicine. And we're working with, and I'm on the board of directors for the International Hyperbaric Association as well. We're trying to get that word out to everybody, not just the old white guy club in Florida, where we just talk to the old men and we keep our hush-hush secrets from all the people that want it. No, that's not the way we do things around here. We tell everybody everything and we go, you make your own decision. So you have to make sure that when you're doing and you're dosing, that you're dosing it correctly. And that comes with knowledge and experience. So that's with everything. Even if you're talking about regular drugs, Sudafed, right? How much do you prescribe for Sudafed, right? So you need to know those dosing instructions. So it does change for every single individual. What do we need to learn all that? We need a comprehensive testing center to figure out everything that needs to be figured out.
I need to ask you a question. I know the answer. I think I know how you're going to answer that, but I'm still going to ask that because, again, it's a question that comes up a lot for people who are listening.
Sure.
Their chambers with high pressure, they can go up to 2, 3, 4, and even 7 atmospheres. There are pressures that go to only 1.3, 1.5, 1.75, different kinds of chambers that can produce different kinds of pressure. And people ask, is one pressure better than the other? Does it mean that higher pressure is better than milder pressure?
I would answer that question with a question. What's wrong with you? Right? So if you are looking for the mechanism of action for, let's say, decompression sickness, the best approved that we know right now is 2.81 PO2 times 288 minutes. That's the best that we know right now today. Now, are you talking about traumatic brain injury? What we're finding is that 1.6 to 1.7 to 1.5 is the better range because of vasoconstriction and increasing brain-derived neurotrophic factor and increasing cerebral blood flow and, you know, HIF-1 alpha. So that's the kind of stuff that you got to be smart about hyperbarics before you, you know, just, oh yeah, I can just treat this all the same. If you treat traumatic brain injury at 2.81, you're going to do more damage than good, right? Because it's going to over-vasoconstrict. That's what your body does. And you're going to decrease oxygen throughput. So that's a problem. But this is where hyperbaric physicians and hyperbaric practitioners need to just know more. And if they know more, they'll go, oh, now I understand. I can dwell this out via, you know, this metering measure. So that's easy enough. So, yeah, I mean, look, science wins over BS every time. Never forget that, right? So we're scientists. This is what we want to do. You want to do your PhD. You get it, right? And your readers or your listeners probably get it. They're like, hey, look, we have to have a little bit of evidence. Now, do we need 420,000 people to go through a clinical trial? I don't think so, right? Can we just find the mechanism of action, try and see if it applies and apply it loosely across a broad spectrum of types of diseases and point and see if people get better? Yeah, that's probably a good way of working it. But so the answer is it depends. I can tell you that the laws of physics always apply. So if there's an increased pressure, there's an increased partial pressure, and that law of physics applies. I'm not the smartest guy in the world, so I don't know that for sure.
And yeah, but you were the guy that I wanted to ask this question. If anybody can explain this, you would be. You. Wow, thank you. That was an amazing episode. I would stay in and I would keep asking you questions.
You can call me back anytime.
I will. I'm taking a rain check for that. Now, let's do another episode in 6 months when you know the actual results of the test, because that would be interesting to see. I want to wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Down there to use your time to your advantage and really do all these wonderful things and find not only partial cures, but complete cures for many diseases. I know they exist. I believe in the same thing. If there is a disease, there should be a cure.
You would think.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. To your listeners, thank you very much. Follow me on Dr. Deep Sea YouTube page or any of the social medias. I'm Dr. Deep Sea. So follow me, check out what we're doing and see our research. It's kind of cool. We'll be presenting at the World Extreme Medicine Conference in Scotland in November. So we'll have this data by about November.
Perfect. Perfect. Guys, all the information is in the podcast description. So you can find Dr. Jituri there. Thank you. Thanks for listening.